on the pasuk of Matoivu Oyalecha Yankir Mishkenesechi Yisrael, one of Bilam's observations was how beautiful are your tents, your Mishkenes Yankir. Chazal tell us what was beautiful about them. She'en pischeyem mechavnei zu k'neged zu. The way they set up the tents is that none of the doorways were open to the other one's doorways. The windows didn't correspond to the windows. There was what we call tznius. There was modesty, meaning there was privacy. Very good translation, by the way, of tznius. Not modesty, but privacy. It gives a whole different perspective on it. So, I want to go back over some of the points that we touched on yesterday to offer a pshat and what that means. So yesterday we discussed the pasuk that says, Mimana Afra Yankiv, that Bilam exclaims, who can count the dirt of Yankiv? And Rashi tells us that even the dirt is full of mitzvahs. For instance, don't plow with your ox and your donkey together. Or don't plant species in close proximity of one another. Mitzvah of klayim. And so on. So the Shem Shmuel of Sachachov quotes this. And he says that Balak's trepidation, Balak's fear, the reason he knew that he would not be able to conquer Klal Yisrael, where he says, he nekisas ein ha'aretz, he sends his message to Bilam, saying this nation's gone out of Egypt, and they've covered the eye of the land. Come and curse him for me, v'agarshenu min ha'aretz, so that I could divorce it, I could separate it from the land, meaning I could banish him from the land. That would be the simple translation. So the Shem Shmuel suggests that the way the nations of the world can conquer Klal Yisrael is if there's a separation in their Avodah. Meaning that their Ruchnius is their Ruchnius, but Gashmius is completely and totally in the realm of the godless. Okay? Problem was, he said, in Ikisa's Einars, these people have gone out, and rather than separating their physical world from God, they've done the exact opposite. They've taken all Dvar and Gashmiim, and they've sanctified them and brought them into Ruchnius. Quotes this Medrash, that the Medrash says that every single area of life in Jewish life has a mitzvah which relates to it. Because all of the halachas of the Torah, mevarin is kol koichos hara hamigashmi. An incredible thing he says here. That if we approach gashmius, and in one's mindset is the halachas that pertain to that, it destroys, it consumes the powers of evil that are affiliated with that Dover Gashmi. And it reminded me of an interesting story that they told about the Zayd Ramatul, who was once traveling, and he came to somebody's home, and going into the home, he put his hand on the mezuzah, tried to walk in, took his hand off the mezuzah, put his hand back on the mezuzah, took his hand off, and then he said to the homeowner, is there another doorway that I could enter through? So he said, yeah. So he went to the other doorway, put his hand on the mezuzah, and walked in, and the guy was very disturbed by this, what was up. So he couldn't contain himself any longer, and he said, Rebbe, is there something wrong? Was the mezuzah puzzled? So Motla said, no. He said, but find out what that mat was used for. So he said, why? So he said, I have a custom that whenever I approach something, I try thinking of the halachas that speak about this, whatever it is that I'm approaching. So I put my hand on the mezuzah, and I wanted to think about the laws of mezuzah. And a whole area, a whole different area of halacha popped into my mind. So I figured, okay, I wasn't focusing right. So I tried it again. Same thing happened a second time. So when it happened the third time, I realized that it was not by error. And I wanted to keep up my custom. So I tried going through another door, and it wasn't a problem. Sure enough, the guy looked into the matter, and the mat had been used for a different purpose. And, you know, to him, it was a wild sign of where Rav Motala's head was at. But according to what the Medrash is saying here, that the reason the Rebbeinu Shalom gave us detailed laws regarding every area of life is because it's those very approaches that remove whatever poison might be, whatever ra might be affiliated with that physical thing, is removed when we approach it halachically. And in a strange way, I believe that one of the things Hashem Yishmul here is saying here is it's good to shop in a place that has kosher and non-kosher food. Because if you live in a place where all there is kosher food, it's a mindless shopping experience. You're never touching it with the halachas of kashrus. Where when you go shopping and you're checking things for hechsherim, so you're now touching the experience with the halacha that sanctifies the food. Very interesting twist. Something we would imagine to be a negative is be'etzem a positive. Similarly, you know, perhaps those people who have separate milchigs and fleishigs kishens, it's not such a great idea. That there really should be a consciousness, okay, which sink should I put this spoon into? And you know, what am I mixing this pot with? And all those, you know, hundreds of things that are constantly flickering on our screen every day when we're dabbling in the kitchen. Because the fact is that, according to what the Shem Yishmul is saying here, those halachas that come to our mind are the very things that turn this from a simply gashmiistic experience into a davar ruchni. He goes on to say that therefore you will find that those things that have the greater potential to bring a person down, if a person is immersed in it, has more halachas. So the laws of agriculture, there are, I don't know what, 5, 6 mesechtis and seder zroim that deal with laws of planting and klayim and peah and all the various agricultural halachas. He says we're on the opposite side. There are no mishnayos dealing with the laws of Sefer Torah, mezuzah, and those spiritual stuff. Because those things are already dvarim ruchnim. Those are already spiritual. Whereas the laws of finances, the laws of marriage, all those things have far more halachas and far more mesechtis teaching us those laws, because those are things that require and demand sanctification. So when Bilam saw the Mimana Afar Yankiv, when Bilam saw what Jews do with dirt, he said, forget it. I can't be the people who plant differently than everybody else is. And you know, whose approach to Gashmias involves all of these, you know, numerous halachos. You should see what's going on in Eretz Yisrael now in preparation of Shemitah, next year's Shemitah. An upheaval. The whole land is busy with how they're gonna deal with Shemitah. Bilam says, I can't. You can't beat a people like that. All right. Now, so yesterday I shared with you the Svas Emes from the Bezhan Eruv and how he explains this not only pertaining to mitzvahs, but he takes it a step further. He quotes the pasuk in Mishlei, Perek Gimel, that says, "B'chol derchecha de'ehu, in all of your ways you shall know Hashem." And in fact, in Shulchan Aruch, this is quoted, that in all of a person's matters in this world, a person should see to it that he includes the Ribbono Shel Olam. Lo yechavel lanos, he shouldn't only think about his own pleasure, rather to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the Pasuk says, b'chol derechecha de'eyu, and Chazal say, all of your actions should be l'shem Shemayim. So therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch, even the matters of, that are not religious matters, divrei harishus, like eating, drinking, walking, sitting, getting up, vacationing, schmoozing, all bodily needs should all be done either as a mitzvah themselves or as something that will bring a person to cause, it will cause them, it will assist them in their service of Hashem. And he makes the observation that those who have the privilege of exclusively dwelling in matters of the spirit are few and far between, that there really are not that many people that have that privilege. And lest anybody think that those who are sitting and learning have that privilege, many of those people are working side jobs and night jobs and doing all kinds of things on the side in order to survive. But there are individuals whose minds don't veer. Yeah. There are many safeguards around many things. Again, this is subject to, to Chazal's understanding of which things require greater safeguards, right? And those which, that's all part of it. That's all part of that same system. Am I allowed to touch this or am I not? No, the point is that if there was such a requirement, then they would have told us to have such a thing. The very fact that they didn't tells us that there is that's not an ideal. Now, if you're a hotel or a catering kitchen, obviously that's different. So, we understand that there are the Kehanim, the Levim, the Sanhedrin, the people who live and toil entirely in the world of the Spirit. And then there's the vast majority of people who live in the physical world. And he says it's incumbent upon us to realize that these are two different forms of service. Okay? Now, there's no question that, I've shared with you in the past, the Noam of the Melech, who says, and the Chazal say, Ashrei mi shebolekan v'talmudei biyodei. Fortunate is the person who comes here and he has his learning in his hand. So, Rabbi the Melech asks, that's usually not where you have your learning. You don't have your learning in your hand. You have your learning in your head. Would make more sense. See, he says, how do you know if a person's learning is done for the Rabbeinu Shalom's sake? It's if a person learns in order to be able to perform. And a person yearns and stands there waiting for the opportunity to be able to do what he's learned about, right? That's when you could see if his learning was really just an intellectual thrill, or was he really in it for the Rebbeinu Shlom's sake? So when a person actually goes ahead and does what he was learning about, then you see that his learning was for the right sake. They tell the story of a guy who spent years and years learning the laws of treifus of which things in a chicken or in an animal are kosher or not. And there's a lot of talk in the halacha about a kurkavin. A kurkavin is the pipical of a chicken. Okay? What do they call them in English? Gizzard. So, huh? No. Anyway, so this guy, whatever it is, my grandmother made it really well. Pipiklach. The gargle is the neck. No, I'm talking about the pipik, the pupik. Anyway, so he came the, I don't think so. Anyway, bottom line is, he finally comes upon a meat market. And he goes and talks to the butcher, and the butcher points out the body parts of the chicken, and he grabs the pipicle and gives it a kiss and says, "Oh, finally, the Heilige Kurkavin. I've been learning so much about this Kurkavin. I've never run into one before. This is the first time, like my first meeting with the Kurkavin." He was all excited that he got finally to, you know. And so many times when you learn about something, and then you have the experience of actually you know, living it, it's a whole different experience once you've studied about it, once you learned about it, and then you come into it. It's like all the other type, right? If you learn Masech the Sukkah, and then you come upon Sukkah, it's a whole different thing. You know, it's just a he says, Asher Mishabalakat, fortunate is the person who comes up after 120 years. Vitalmuda biyoda, and his learning is in his hands, meaning he actually did what he learned about. He lived it. It wasn't just an intellectual pursuit. In fact, the Maharnaim, in one of his places, makes a very harsh statement. He says, I want to ask you a question. He says, what's better, or what should be more significant? A person who learns the laws of business, or a person who lives the laws of business? He says, isn't it logical that you would that a person who actually brings them to life, like you learn all these halakhos about lending money and not charging interest and all that kind of stuff. So what's greater, to learn the laws or to fulfill them, to actually lend the money to somebody and not charge them interest? Clearly, he says, Asher Mishabalakam and Talmud Deviyadah. That's a person who's living it. So the Sosema says that concept, B'chol Derechecha De'ehu, is an acronym of Bodod. The word Bada that we find in this week's parasha is an acronym of Bada. He puts it into the Pasuk. I was very excited about this. Pasuk in Vayikra Yud Gimel, the Pasuk says, Bada Yeshev, he should sit alone, Michutz Lemachne Meshava. He's sitting outside of the camp. Says the Sfasemes, there are those people who sit in the Machne, those fortunate few who have the privilege to sit in the Machne Shechina. They live in the camp of the Shechina. The Kahanim, the Levim, the Sanhedrin, the privileged few. The rest of us are Mechutz L'machna. The rest of us are outside of the camp. He says the Pasuk, Bodod Yeshiv. Make sure that your attitude is B'chol D'rachecha De'eil. Those who are sitting Mechutz L'machna, you're not in the camp, you're not learning all day, make sure that your attitude is pervaded through and through with the concept of Bodod of B'chol D'rachecha De'eil. That's what it's all about. Those are the people who shine. And these are two different avodas. Two. B'chol D'rachecha De'eil. You shall know Hashem in all of your ways. He goes on to say, which was, again, very, especially we're coming up on the 3 weeks. He says, Echa Yashva Badad. What happened? What happened to the Badad? Ha'ira Basiyam. The city that used to be so full of people who toiled, who lived in B'chol D'rachecha De'eil. What's happened? Echa Yashva Badad. Where did they all go? And he applies it to Bilam and Balak's attitude. there's a concept that's brought, I think it's from a Sefer Yetzira. The word emes. Says the Sefer Yetzira is made up of two, really a breakdown of two words. Aleph, and what's the rest of it? Mace. What's a mace? Mace is a dead body, right? He says that emes is comprised of someone who takes that which appears to be mace, that which appears to be lifeless, and one infuses it with the capital Aleph, the Alufay Shel Olam, the Aleph of the world. Then somebody takes that which is mace and turns it into emes. And emes, says the Pasuk, is Kayemes La'ad. Emes endures forever. A mace ceases to exist. But when somebody infuses that which is otherwise godless, and they infuse it with the Aleph, then it becomes something that's touched by the Eternal. It's touched by the Eternal, then it's Kayemes La'ad, then it exists forever. Chofetz Chaim says, "Chosamay shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu emes." The seal of Hashem is emes. What does it mean? The seal of Hashem. Says the Chofetz Chaim. He says, "You got to go back to the movies here, where they used to have a signet ring." Signet ring had a seal on it, right? And when somebody wanted to seal a letter to make sure that you knew that it was authentic, so you'd put some wax on the envelope, and you take the ring and you press it into the wax, right? And now you know that it's an authentic document. When you look at the ring, what do you see? You see a backwards image, right? Says the Chofetz Chaim, we look at this world, the world appears upside down and inside out. It just appears like everything's topsy-turvy, everything's wrong. He says, Chesam Reishol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, the reason we're experiencing that is because we're looking at the signet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as it appears to us, as we're looking at the symbol itself, it's upside down. But when we will eventually look at the world of truth in its eventual destination of when HaKadosh Baruch Hu removes the curtains from the world, then we will see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desire was, yes, temporarily, when you're looking at the symbol itself, it seems to be hafuch, it's backwards. It's not backwards in its true desire. I suggested to the guys Friday night that's why the custom is Friday night by Boi B'Sholem, right after your Mekalba Shabbos, the whole shul turns around backwards. You turn around to face the back. Because Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. Shabbos is a glimpse into the world to come. Right? So in order to remember that what we're looking at all week is an upside down, topsy-turvy world, so for a moment, Friday night, you turn around and look at the world. You get a glimpse into the way the world ought to be, the world of truth as it will appear. Los love. So getting back to the Maranayim. The Maranayim says that we take that which is otherwise mace, that which is otherwise godless, has no life unto itself, and we infuse it with the Aleph. We insert Hashem into that world, and as a result, the things that would otherwise be dying, meaningless, empty vessels, all of a sudden become emes. And this is the whole concept why you see For instance, Yaakov Avinu went back for the Pachim Ketanim. He went back for his little jugs. Right? And Chazal point out that a Jew recognizes that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought into their domain is there for them to utilize it. The Bav Veruv told me that when they came to the United States, he said that he had a massive collection of jars. Because in Europe, you never threw away a jar, you reused the jar. Well, they came here, and here in America already at that time, stuff came in jars, and you threw jars away. He couldn't bring himself to throw away jars until they had a room full of jars. I said, this is ridiculous, and we got to get rid of these jars. We had some Jews here who had a garage full of jars. He just couldn't bring himself to throw them away. But once upon a time, it was a simon of you know, when the world was not into disposable everything, people understood that something came into your domain. It was there to touch it with the aleph, to infuse it with the aleph. The benefit of it is that everything that we touch is added to our ledger. Rabbi Tatz tells this amazing story, which I believe we could apply to what we're talking about. He tells it about suffering, which is an incredible story. Rabbi Tatz says that he tells it about a person who came to a tzaddik, and his suffering was incredible. It was endless, endless suffering. And he came, he gave a kvittel to the tzaddik, and he says, Rebbe, please make the suffering stop. So while he's there, he gives the kvittel, he's sitting down, and he falls asleep. And he falls asleep, and he has this image that he's up. He's upstairs in front of the Beis Din Shalemayla, up in front of the great court. And they are bringing in his deeds. They're coming in truckfuls. So first this white angel comes, you know, the good guys, the ones with the halo. And they bring in trucks, and he's all excited. You know, they put it on, they have one of these old-fashioned scales, you know, with the two sides. And they start loading him up with trucks of good deeds, and he's very, very happy, and he thinks this is really going well. And then the guy with the pitchfork shows up. And all of a sudden, he sees, you know, Highway 80 stretching from California to New York with, you know, trucks. And he says, what's that? They said, those are your Averis. And the Sevetim Bitter, and he watches this scale going, you know, the side with the Averis are going down, down, down. And he's frightened out of his mind. He can't believe it. And then there's a third set of trucks that begin to show up. He says, what are those? He says, that's the suffering. He says, oh no, where do those go? He says, those go with your mitzvahs. Those go with your good deeds. Those go with the mitzvahs. And all of a sudden, the scales that now are completely distorted start evening out, and in the truck, they're loading up truck after truck after truck, and it's starting to even out, and the last truck comes, and the side of the Averis is still heavier, and he wakes up and screams, now Rebbe, please, one more truck of suffering, right? That's the story my dad tells. I don't know if the story ever happened, it's a great story. We need to understand that the Dvarim Gashmiim, the physical aspects of life, that we are able either to, as the Shulchan Aruch says, to actually become mitzvahs. For instance, Einik Shabbos. Einik Shabbos is a phenomenal opportunity. Not of a preparation to a mitzvah, but a mitzvah itself. Okay, what one does for Einik Shabbos is not prep. Prep would be, we're going to eat so that we can learn. We're going to eat so that we can perform mitzvahs, okay? That's preparation. Einik Shabbos is a mitzvah itself. So anything, any davar gashmi that we are able to take and utilize either as a preparation or as a utilization of a mitzvah itself, even though it itself is not one of the 613 mitzvahs per se. that ends up on that side of the scale. They tell the story again of one of the tzaddikim who this tzaddik came to stay in their house, and when the tzaddik came, so the whole, you know, all the people who wanted to meet him also came, and it was rainy outside. This guy had white carpeting, and there was mud galore. And by the time the tzaddik was there for 45 minutes, his carpeting was no longer white, and everything was caked with this mud. And he became very discouraged until the tzaddik turned to him and said, you don't realize that one day you're going to need the weight of this mud. You know, the weight of this mud is going to end up on that side of the scale. And to that degree, must we understand that there's a concept called somebody who is a nargin mafrid aluf. The Zohar calls it a person who divides the Aleph. It's a person who separates Hashem from where he could be connected and turns Emes into two separate words, Aleph and Mes. Okay? So there are those who create Emes in the world, and there are those who separate Emes in the world. Two polar opposites in their interests and in their effect upon the world. So, what he says is that Balak had hoped that he can divide Klal Yisrael, utilizing the areas that are common between Jews and non-Jews, namely, you look out, we work and they work, and we eat and they eat, and we vacation and they vacation, and so on. That kind of stuff, at least we should be able to keep under our umbrella, says Balak to Bilam. We want to keep, at least the Gashmias should be left onto our side of the ledger, which was the whole argument between Yaakov and Esav, Yitin Lecha Lekim Mital Hashemayim Mishmani Oretz Hashem. The brachas that were given to Yaakov was, you'll have the best of this world. And Yaakov says, it's not for the sake of this world, it's so that I will utilize it to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he saw, Hine Am Yotzim Mitzrayim, there's a nation that's going out of Egypt. Vineki says, Ein Oretz, he's covered over the eye of the land. He says, we need to go and curse him, v'agarshenu min ha'aretz, that we could separate him from the earth, separate him from Artzias. We need to separate these people from their pursuit of Gashmias for the sake of God. We got to get rid of it, otherwise we have no access to them. And that's what he says, mimana afar yank. Who can count even the dirt of Yaakov? Their dirt is holy. Their dirt is suffused with mitzvahs. He says, that's what Bilam says to Bilam, Hein am levodod yishkan. This nation is a nation that practices levodod is b'chol derechecha de'eh. This nation lives in a world of bodod. I can't. There's no way to put the wedge in. I can't get in, because even their gashmius, even their physical, all the aspects of the physical life is completely suffused with godliness. Ubagoyim lo yischashav. It's an attitude which has no chshivas. It has no meaning among the nations. They have no such. You know, there are the ascetics among them that remove themselves from the physical aspects of life. But as far as people who are able to live in the Gashmistic world and utilize it to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's an attitude that they're not familiar with. What I proposed yesterday is that we need some kind of barometer to know how we can judge. And that I believe that when Chazal tell us that in the time to come, when a person comes up after life, they're asked two questions initially. First question is, Nasasa v'nasata be'emuna. Did you conduct yourself in business with emuna? And the second question is, Kavati itim l'Torah. Did you establish times for Torah? And I think that one of the things that Chazal are pointing to us is that if our gashmias is done correctly, the result of it will be a much easier natural inclination towards serving Hashem. If there is nasasa v'nasata be'emuna, if our gashmi's interactions is done be'emuna, it's done correctly, infusing the aleph into the mace, the result will be a much easier approach to kriyas itam l'tayra. Kriyas itam l'tayra for men means setting aside designated times for learning. And for women means setting aside designated times for avodas Hashem, for serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the many ways that we're all called upon to serve. And you want to know how it's going? See how big is the fight? How great is the struggle to set aside time to serve? If that struggle is fierce, then there's something wrong with that which is feeding it. If the feeder is corrupted, then the struggle is much more difficult. In fact, there were great people who found that they were not succeeding with their Talmidim. And when they went to Tzaddikim to figure out what the issue was, they pointed out to them that the source of their money was treif. And it was tainted money. And when there's tainted money, there's tainted Torah. And the same is true of our own individual practice of Yiddishkeit. If it's a tainted, if the source is tainted, if there is no God consciousness, you know, to use the extreme example, you can't learn good Torah if you're eating cheeseburgers. Right? We all understand that. But in a much more edler way, the same is going to matter if what the kavanas of a person is as they're preparing their food. It's going to affect the outcome of the quality of the Torah. It's going to affect the outcome of the quality of the struggle of the person who needs to designate the time for the Torah. Yeah.